Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Asperger's syndrome is a form of autism, one where people can often speak eloquently and have extraordinary abilities in engineering, computer science, systematic thinking, yet have real difficulties in social interaction and engaging with the world. Here's Nikki Gottlieb, the subject of the new documentary, Today's Man.
Physically, I'm a man. But mentally and emotionally, I'm a boy. I'm still a child.
This hour On Point, we'll talk with Nikki and others about what it means to live with Asperger's syndrome. Joining me now from New York are the brother and sister, Nikki and Lizzie Gottlieb. She directs theater and film, in New York. Her new documentary is all about him, their family, and Asperger's. It aired last week on PBS. It's called Today's Man, Adventures of a Young Man with Asperger's Syndrome. Lizzie Gottlieb, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks so much for having us.
Also with us from New York is the star of the show, Lizzie's brother, Nikki Gottlieb. He was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome when he was 20 years old. He's now 29. Nikki Gottlieb, thank you very much for coming into the studio.
You're welcome.
It's great to have you. And with us from New York is Linda Geller. She's clinical director of the Asperger Institute at New York University. From 2004 to 2006, she was executive director of the Asperger Foundation International. Linda Geller, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
This documentary is a terrific journey into the life of a family that's clearly very loving, lots of great relationships and support here, and yet, at the heart of it, something that's not always easy to deal with. Let's listen for just a moment to a bit from the documentary, Today's Man. Here, Nikki's talking with his mother, Maria Tucci, about getting out more in the world.
If you're going to spend the mornings watching Mr. Rogers, and then your soap in the middle of the day, and then you hope to get a job after the soap is over, and hope to catch some Sesame Streets, and then watch your television in the evening.
I'll watch all of it in the evening.
Then there is no life.
Come on. Everyone watches television.
You know that nobody watches as much television as you who functions in the world.
I'll get it. I'd like to try to get it all in.
But it is not going to nourish you, Nikki.
It'll just make me happy.
I know. It'll keep you very safe. That is true.
It'll make me happy. Isn't that what matters? I'd be losing something huge. A very important part of my life would just be gone. And I'm not going to stand for that.
Great. Then? No, but Nikki, that's fine. Then you're saying that you can't go out into the world.
I want both, and people have both. Can't I just be a somebody who can be a little eccentric and watch television in this systematic way?
An exchange there between Nikki Gottlieb and his mother, Maria Tucci, in Lizzie Gottlieb's new documentary, Today's Man. And Lizzie and Nikki, first, I wanted to compliment you, Lizzie, on the documentary. It's terrific, and I have to say, I was riveted front to back by the intimacy of this portrait of a family working really hard and with such goodwill to make this work out. And Nikki Gottlieb, thanks to you for your generosity in letting your sister bring the camera into your life.
I enjoyed it so much.
Lizzie, that exchange we just heard, put it in some context for us. TV is important to Nikki in his everyday life. Getting a job, at least as portrayed in the documentary, has been tricky. And there's your mom with Nikki, 29 years old, trying to encourage him to a little less TV, get out in the world. And you hear him making his counter argument that for him, a little eccentric, maybe that's just not the right thing. Here's the challenge right in front of him and your family.
Yeah, I think it's always a struggle to figure out to what extent, for us as a family, to what extent we should just love Nikki and appreciate him for who he is, exactly who he is and exactly what he wants to do, or try to push him to fit into the world more, to behave more normally. We often feel that that's what would end up making him feel more fulfilled and happy. But routines and patterns are really important to him. And as he says, make him feel safe and happy.
Nikki, what about
so it's
it?
A do
you, it's a big. Do you, Nikki, do you still have this debate with, let's say, your parents between, you know, them encouraging you to get out in the world and you feeling comfortable with certain routines at home?
Well, yes, I will say that the television, no question, has not abated in the slightest. But I think that talking about routines in that context, I think, is a little exaggerated. I mean, yes, I always have loved routines, and I've loved the beauty of them. You know, I like the beauty of a schedule and all that.
Yeah.
But that, of course, is not the reason or not the only reason why television is important. It's also the content. And I think the last words, this systematic way, I was just talking to Lizzie about this after the PBS airing. Actually, Lizzie wasn't there, but to the people around me, the systematic way was, I was feeling that it was something that I thought should be cut, and I don't know how that got in. But because it's not like I have to watch TV. I have to watch, as my mother said, Mr. Rogers at 11:30. It could be at any time, taped or DVR'd.
So the systematic piece got
But the systematic, I don't know how the systematic way got in. Maybe
Well, we all say things in the spur of the moment. Maybe it's not exactly the thing that you mean. On the other hand,
I'll tell you what I think it could mean.
Yeah.
Maybe, as I said, you know, I do love schedules and the beauty of them, and maybe that was kind of overshadowing me in those kinds of blended together when I said that.
But, yeah, Nikki, do you feel that that need overshadows your need to get a job and to be more out in the world?
I don't think, because I don't think that quite is it. I mean, I've actually had, since then and before, as you can see in the continuity of the movie, this comes just before the job scene.
Right.
I don't know, not just, but you know, it comes before the scene when I'm at MTC.
At the theater company. Nikki, hold that thought. I want to come back and look at those efforts because there's a lot of attention focused here on what it's like as somebody with Asperger's gets older. Their parents are clearly, you know, want you or want anyone's parents, want them to have a way out into the world. I want to invite Linda Geller into the conversation for just a moment. And Linda, if you would be good enough to just give us some definition here, to the extent that there is a definition, what is Asperger's syndrome?
Well, Asperger's syndrome is a neurobiological condition that's developmental in nature. People have it from birth, but what we recognize is it's an outcome of people's brain differences and then how they interact with the world. So therefore, every person with Asperger's syndrome is a very unique individual. Nikki's a wonderful example of many of the issues that people with Asperger's syndrome face, but there's also lots and lots of other different ways to have Asperger's syndrome. There's people who are not successful at all in even trying work, and then there's people who are very successful in the workplace. There's people who have no relationships at all with others, and people who've learned how to make relationships with people who are open to their differences.
How is Asperger's related to autism?
We generally think about it as, I think you said it's a neurological cousin. That's really a nice way to think about it. It has similar problems in that people with Asperger's syndrome and autism both have social issues as their main component. That's the unifying quality. Yet because it's a neurobiological outcome, everybody's different. So you see people with Asperger's and autism sharing the social issues, not having an easy time connecting, forming relationships, not understanding the give and take of sociality in the workplace or in relationships. So people with autism and Asperger's share that, but people with Asperger's syndrome are generally more cognitively and linguistically high-functioning, and you're much more likely to encounter people with Asperger's syndrome in typical environments.
Social connecting is the big challenge, but there are upsides or strengths that seem to come along often with Asperger's as well. Like what, Linda?
Yes, we like to think about the strengths as well as the weaknesses, and one of the main strengths is that focus. People can direct that focus to ways that are very compelling and that bring them vocational success or success in some other area of their life. So being very focused is a strength, and many scientists and engineers have that focus. And some of them have the diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome and yet are very successful individuals.
If you go online, you can't be there 5 seconds without seeing Albert Einstein and Mozart and even Bill Gates associated with Asperger's. Is that urban legend, or is there cause to believe that, Linda Geller?
Well, we don't like to diagnose people that we can't meet anymore.
Fair enough.
But certainly all of those people share some traits of both the intensity and having some difficulty with easy sociality. Whether they have Asperger's syndrome or just share some of the traits, that's not something that we can really be sure of. But they're nice examples of people who have some social difficulties and yet are very successful in other ways because of the focus and because of their high talents in lots of these areas.
And are we seeing more diagnosis of Asperger's in the American population in recent years? Is it a higher incidence, just a greater level of diagnosis? What's going on there?
It's just a greater understanding of the syndrome. It wasn't even in our nomenclature to make it as a diagnosis until 1994. So most adults who have Asperger's syndrome didn't even have the opportunity of being diagnosed as a child because it wasn't one of our diagnoses that we give according to the DSM-4.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about life with Asperger's syndrome, the high-functioning cousin of autism that's being diagnosed in more and more Americans. There's a new documentary, you may have seen it on PBS, called Today's Man, Adventures of a Young Man with Asperger's Syndrome, is out. Lizzie Gottlieb is the director of that film, and the number one subject of that film is her brother, Nicky Gottlieb. They join us today from New York. Linda Geller's here as well, clinical director of the Asperger Institute at New York University. We're going to hear later in this hour from a prominent MIT alum who's raised the issue among other MIT grads, saying, look, it may be us, it's certainly our children very often as well in this math-gifted universe who are wrestling with Asperger's, and let's talk about that. Nicky Gottlieb, portrayed in the documentary, is having trouble with sometimes with nonverbal cues, but in other areas you can do things you probably can't. Listen here.
Easter is the first Sunday after the first full moon after the vernal equinox, March 21st. I know all the Easters of the 20th and 21st century, and now I'll recite them. 1900, April 15th. 1901, April 7th. 1902, March 30th. 1903, April 12th.
Something maybe you can't do. On the other hand, Nicky Gottlieb describes in the film Today's Man how tough it can be with Asperger's to wrestle through the social cues that most of us just treat as ordinary and interpret quite easily.
Sometimes I understand how people feel, and sometimes I don't. Sometimes I don't look hard enough into a person's mind. I only hear the words they're saying and interpret those words. And that's not enough for understanding how someone's feeling. For instance, you're told, people are sad when they cry. People are angry when people are angry. They show a certain emotion. But sometimes people can be sad and angry without expressing such emotions. And that's been confusing to me a lot.
Nicky Gottlieb in Today's Man, the documentary, sharing with wonderful explicitness what it's like to work through social cues and relations with Asperger's syndrome. Lizzie Gottlieb made the documentary, and Lizzie, you know, as Linda was saying, it wasn't that long ago that it wasn't even categorized formally. Now people talk about it a lot in scientific circles, in financial circles. In New York City, you know, I've heard people in finance circles, the quants and those that do lots of that kind of analysis, mathematical analysis of markets and so on, sort of throw this around almost embracing it as, hey, I'm you know, slightly Asperger's, and look what it lets me do. What do you think of the way the characterization, the term that is used and perceived these days?
let me just back up a little bit and say, when I started making this film, Nikki was 20, and we had never heard of Asperger syndrome. And every doctor, every expert we had taken him to had said they'd never seen anyone like him. He had these amazing skills, as you say, the dates and incredible number skills, but socially had a lot of difficulties. And so it wasn't until, and I just thought he was the most extraordinary person I had ever met. And
he comes across as extraordinary. I'll give you that.
He is. He is really extraordinary and wonderful. And I decided to make a film about him. And it was about 6 months after we started filming. By the way, I thought the film would take about 6 months to make, and it ended up taking me
forever.
You know, 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
But it was about 6 months after we started filming that we started hearing this word Asperger syndrome. And I went to a meeting and met other people who were like Nikki. And we had spent 20 years not having any idea that there was anybody else like him. Mm. So this was kind of a revelation. And the film ended up being, you know, that sort of formed what the film was about. It was about Nikki as he grew up and entered the world, and about what happens to these, you know, sort of genius children as they grow up and things become more difficult, and there's not an obvious place for them in the world.
It wasn't that long ago now in Wired magazine that they wrote about the geek syndrome and autism as a surging in among children of Silicon Valley. There again, a kind of ambivalence about it. On the one hand, acknowledgement that it's not easy always to live with. On the other hand, gifts come with it. And from Silicon Valley to Wall Street, they seem in part to be being embraced. Does that I don't know, add up to you, Lizzie, with your experience of it?
I guess I feel that there's a, you know, people talk about autism as a spectrum, and I think there's a spectrum of Asperger syndrome. And there's a point at which one can be more or less functional in the world and have greater or less abilities and talents. I don't know. Nikki might have some things to say about that.
Nikki, how about it? Do you meet other folks? I know in the film you're shown at a kind of an Asperger's group meeting where you're interacting with other people who have Asperger's. Do you see a spectrum, a range of the weight of Asperger's or the way it's manifested in other people?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I do know a lot of people with Asperger's, and each one is different. But it's just that it's all they're all on a similar spectrum, and they're all on a similar spectrum. They just, you know, have different, just like people.
When you meet someone with Asperger's, Nikki, do you know pretty quickly? Can you identify it as somebody who lives with it every day?
Not at first glance, but certainly when I hear something, it is very easy to tell.
How do you know?
But maybe for some people more than others.
How do you know? How do you discern?
Well, it depends on the person. One person I remember meeting, and I could tell right away. First they said so, and then they backed it up and I could see. Well, someone else, It took a little longer because the problem seemed different. But as I just said, that's like every person, every Asperger person is different.
Linda Geller, what about this spectrum?
I think it's important to realize that we make this diagnosis when someone has problems that are associated with it. So there's many people out in the world who aren't having problems but have some of these characteristics. Asperger's syndrome is a genetic issue, so that it's frequent to see in families some of the traits, not necessarily the full syndrome, but dad or mom will have certain traits that are like their son who has Asperger's syndrome. Doesn't mean they have Asperger's syndrome. And we don't diagnose it in people who don't have obvious issues relating to the world or in the job place or with relationships. So it's important. Everybody in the world who has certain kind of intense focus, who has some social naivete or certain kinds of social awkwardness, doesn't necessarily have Asperger's syndrome. These traits are manifest in people all over the world who may or may not have it. So the defining thing for having Asperger's syndrome is that it is an impediment to you in your job life or in your relationship to your personal life. So that's important. Everybody that, you know, you're talking about on Wall Street, they may have some traits, and they may have someone in their family with Asperger's syndrome, and they themselves may or may not have it.
We have a remarkable number of people who want to talk about it. The new documentary is Today's Man, and it's really a wonderful, intimate look at Lizzie Gottlieb making the film, Nikki Gottlieb, the main subject of the show, but really it's about the whole family and the community and how Nikki interacts in that family and wider community. We have a lot of people who want to join the conversation. Let's go first to Lake Clear, New York, and Ivona. Hi, Ivona. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, my point, you're talking a lot about employment, and I believe I have Asperger's syndrome or something like it.
Okay.
And my problems with employment have been particularly, you know, you get let go from a job and they tell you, we're sorry, you just don't fit in here. And, you know, that has been the reason over and over and over, because we just don't fit in.
Ivona, what makes you think you have Asperger's syndrome?
I have Asperger's syndrome or possibly nonverbal learning disability.
Mm-hmm.
I had a neuropsychological evaluation done about 10 or 11 years ago to Voc Rehab here in New York State. And they didn't really put a label on my condition, but a lot of the strengths and a lot of the difficulties that they listed from the neuropsychological evaluation fit with the things that I've read or heard about.
What's your answer to the difficulty in the workplace? You're 53, so you've had some time to wrestle with this. What's your solution, or have you found one, Ivona?
Non-conventional. I have a master's in library science. I had to quit. I haven't worked as a librarian in about 7 years because I wasn't getting anywhere with it. I wrote a book since then about people with, it's called Employment for Individuals with Asperger's Syndrome or Nonverbal Learning Disability.
Oh, good for you.
Published by Jessica Kingsley. And, you know, I because I was on these internet lists of, you know, internet groups of people who were saying, well, there's nothing out there for adults. And so, you know, I kind of, the book has a lot of different stories about different individuals' experiences and with employment,
right.
some more successful than others.
Yeah, let's listen for just a moment. Lizzie took the camera right into Nikki Gottlieb's challenges on this front. And here's a bit where he's found a job as a receptionist at the Manhattan Theater Club called the MTC. He really likes the job, and yet the Asperger syndrome kind of gets in there, and you'll hear it, how it can make things tough. Here he's sitting down with his supervisor to talk about some issues.
I would like to work at finding ways to do non-MTC things at the desk and also the eating.
I'm still not comfortable with non-MTC things at the desk, specifically because if I walked into an office and a receptionist were reading 17 magazine, I would think, man, they don't take their job very seriously.
But what if I did it in a way that...
What happens when you try to hide things?
As long as I see it...
Can you just answer that question? Do you think it could be perceived as goofing off?
Not by somebody who knows me.
I find that very hard to believe.
I've given this a lot of thought.
I'm sure you have.
I think I can train myself to...
Is this a matter for discussion at this point?
I'm just telling you that...
Okay, but did I just give you my answer as your supervisor?
But I wanted to just talk about what you said
about... We don't read magazines at our desks. That's just not how MTC employees act.
Nikki Gottlieb in Lizzie Gottlieb's film Today's Man. Nikki, I'm sure this continues to be a big issue for you. Have you found the secret, how to, you know, find the job that you like, that's satisfying to you, and at the same time perform it in a way that makes your supervisors satisfied with your unique approach?
Well, it's actually even though MTC ended now 4 years ago in the spring of 2004,
right?
I have actually not really looked for a job since then, and that was my choice.
Because there's a couple of jobs that that didn't work out in the film. Was it just too painful, or are you discouraged about the prospect of one that will work for you? The right one just hasn't come up. Why?
Because even though it might seem otherwise in the movie, as I said back when we were discussing the television scene,
yeah,
I really would rather not work. And the reason why is not completely because of the television schedule, because as I said, that was before MTC, and you saw how satisfied I was.
But when the MTC job was going well, it was clear that you loved it. You really were flourishing in it.
I did love it. But what I did love really was the specific job, the particular job, not working in general.
Mm-hmm. Lizzie, that must be tough for your family, because they must want Nicky to be able to fend for himself.
I would say it's a big struggle. It's a big struggle. And, it's very hard for someone to succeed in a job when they don't want to. So we've been doing a lot of trying to convince Nicky of how important this is. And he is doing some things, right, Nicky? Nicky's tutoring some ladies in Italian, because he speaks fluent Italian.
Great.
And he's tutoring high school kids in math.
It's one lady.
Only one lady. Okay. Several high school kids.
Nicky, your honesty is thrilling and brilliant, and I love it, though I can see in a work setting it could be hard sometimes. At the theater company, you shared on the phone with somebody who called in that, the particular show was kind of a dud. That led to the end. Honesty is not necessarily socially acceptable, I guess.
No. And and what's ironic is that when I was doing that, I was doing something that I'd been told by JobPath that was was the correct protocol.
Yeah.
And which I did something that I was really told would be a good thing to do with Job, which is to not just do the task of reception, but make conversation.
We can hear you working on it, and we watch you in the film, and it's really moving. Charles is calling from Boston. Hi, Charles. You're on the air.
Welcome back, Tom. I have a question for your panel. I found myself in the position of having to report to someone who quintessentially fits the category of having Asperger's. And
are you sure of that, or you're guessing?
I have actually copies of the DSM-4. I actually work for a medical analytics software company.
Okay.
I'm pretty confident.
So you think your boss has Asperger's syndrome. How's it going?
And it's actually pretty rough, because I do not typically fall into the category of someone who would work for engineering, and my company has been restructured in that direction. So I'm really having struggling with reporting to this person. It's almost as though I seem anonymous to him. And I'm just wondering if there are any suggestions for perhaps what can I do to help my boss help me?
Got it. Linda Geller, when the boss has Asperger's syndrome, Charles wants to know, are there good guidelines? How do you begin?
Well, I would say that, as you know from talking to Nicky, honesty is the best policy. People with Asperger's syndrome tend to be honest to a fault, rather concrete and systematic in the way that they approach things.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to me that having a conversation about the specific demands of the job in a sort of removed way, not necessarily the social parts of it, but what are the exact specifics of the job? What are the demands that the job has, and how can I be successful in those specifics? Might be the best way to approach a boss who has Asperger's syndrome.
Is it common? Are there people at that end of the spectrum who are able to? Well, I guess Bill Gates has a lot of employees. I don't know if he falls in there or not. As you say, we can't diagnose, but yeah, there will be Asperger bosses out there, right, Linda?
There will be. I mean, really, the other end of the problem is more common, where people with Asperger's syndrome can't get employed and are underemployed. That's much more of an issue from a societal point of view. It's very common to have no job at all and to be searching and searching for years and years.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about life with Asperger's syndrome, the high-functioning cousin of autism that's being diagnosed in more and more Americans. The new documentary we're looking at today is Today's Man, Adventures of a Young Man with Asperger's Syndrome. You may have seen it on PBS last week. Lizzie Gottlieb made it. Her brother, Nikki Gottlieb, is the guy at the heart of the show. 29 years old now, has Asperger's Syndrome, and we learn a lot about his life, his interaction with family, the world, jobs, and all the rest. They join us from New York. So does Linda Geller, clinical director of the Asperger Institute at New York University. Let's take a call right now from Putney, Vermont, and Lex. Hi, Lex. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I saw the documentary, and I was immediately struck by a similarity between that and one of my favorite movies was Being There with Peter Sellers. And
Make the link for us, Lex.
Well, Peter, I don't know if you're familiar with the movie, but
of course,
he's somebody who's a gardener, and he lives a very cloistered life and learns about the world through television. And he would seem, looking at the movie, he seemed like somebody with Asperger's. And that just struck me. The other thing is the more I hear about Asperger's and also ADD, is I realize that it's something that I've struggled with all my life, and it was never diagnosed, of course, because the diagnosis wasn't there when I was growing up. And I was wondering, you know, what does somebody do if they realize that they're afflicted with that?
Let us pick it up, Lex, and we'll go first to the theater part of this. Nikki Gottlieb, Lex saw, has seen Being There with Peter Sellers and finds a kind of Asperger-style character there. Are there characters that you find in film or in television that seem to you to convey a kind of sense of the Asperger syndrome world?
Well, first of all, I completely agree with you about Being There, and it's actually what's so interesting is it's amazing you should bring up that movie. And if you notice, it's one of the few movies to feature two shows that I watch in it, Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers, if you remember.
so maybe they're picking up on something that you picked up on big time.
That's what that's my greatest identification with Being There. But of course, the Peter Sellers character is an exaggeration.
In the Asperger's group that you meet with in the film Today's Man, in the documentary, Data, the character from Star Trek, comes up, and lots of the folks around you with Asperger's saying, yeah, he's our guy. We relate to that character of the very personable android in the Star Trek series.
I do not watch Star Trek. I wouldn't know about Data.
Not your show.
No. And, no, that is not my show. No.
Linda Geller, what about the ADD connection here? Our caller Lex wants to know, is that somewhere on a continuum as well, or something quite different?
Well, attention deficit disorder is also a neurobiological condition that is a brain difference. Many people who actually have Asperger's syndrome have been previously diagnosed with it because people notice sometimes that they have attentional difficulties. Someone may have just ADHD, or they may have ADHD and Asperger's syndrome. That's possible as well. But they're not exactly a continuum of each other, but they're both neurobiological differences that we see manifest in children and adults. So if these are the kinds of traits that you find yourself having, one of our greatest resources now is to go on the internet and see if by reading about Asperger's syndrome and ADHD, that you seem to fit the profile, and then try to seek some assistance in your community. If you go on either the GRASP website, which is grasp.org, or the Child Study website, which is aboutourkids.org, you can find both of these disorders described very nicely, and that's sometimes a good first step for adults to see if they think that they fit a profile, and then to seek some professional advice about if that is in fact the case.
I want to bring another voice into our conversation, if I may. Joining us from San Antonio, Texas, is Brian Hughes. He's a graduate, 1977, class of 77 of MIT, product engineer, trustee at MIT now. His son was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, is now a student at MIT. He's been blogging with other MIT alums about the prevalence, if I've got it right, Brian Hughes, of this syndrome among scientific and maybe even MIT families and saying, come on, let's talk about it. Let's come to grips with it. Brian Hughes, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Good to be here.
What's the point that you're looking to make with your fellow scientifically inclined MIT alums, just for starters?
Well, the point I was trying to make is, I think, you know, I went through the same kind of journey that, you know, Nikki's family went through, mm-hmm. where we spent 7 years having no clue what was going on. Our son is now 21, so, but about the same time that Nikki was diagnosed, our son was diagnosed. But I had a period where I was president of the MIT Alumni Association, and I would privately one-on-one, you know, our son had literally just been diagnosed, mm-hmm. so it was top of my mind. And I had one experience where I was sitting beside an alumna and talking about my son, and she looks at me and goes, you're describing my daughter. Well, that caused me to, you know, repeat that conversation during the year, and very unscientifically, it seemed like about a third of the time, whoever I was talking to would say, well, that sounds like my niece, uncle, grandfather, whatever. And I realized that, well, maybe this is something about who and what we are. I think the clincher was we were at a lecture by Dr. Tony Atwood, who wrote Asperger's Syndrome, A Guide for Parents and Professionals, and yeah. he said the following thing, quote, when I lecture at a university, I play a little game which I call Spot the Asperger's Professor, unless, of course, it's a school of engineering, in which case I play Find the One Who's Not.
The suggestion being there that without Asperger's Syndrome, our engineering schools might be depopulated.
Quite possibly. I mean, I think the basic hypothesis is that there are attributes of the, quote, Asperger's syndrome that it's remarkably similar to the normal functioning of an engineer's mind. And I think the key things would be, you know, Nikki talks about his interest in systemizing, in organization. And those are the kind of things engineers need to be able to do well.
You say this raises questions for MIT alumni. I guess we could draw that more broadly to maybe to the American scientific community. That need to be thought about when it comes to genetics and predispositions and maybe Asperger's syndrome and maybe more. What are the questions that you see being raised here, Brian Hughes?
Well, I think we're still kind of stumbling in the dark to a certain point. I mean, I think one of the issues is Asperger's certainly has a stigma attached to it. So getting, you know, a single school to look at it is very difficult. I think what we need to do as a community is across the country, frankly, across the world, take a look at this. Because I think to Linda's earlier point about, you know, you've only got Asperger's syndrome if it's a disability. If it's the core of your, you know, skill set and it's what makes you very employable, then it's not a disability anymore. So, you know, if I've got Asperger's and I'm trying to be a theater critic, mm-hmm. it's a problem. But if I'm trying to be a mathematician, it's probably an asset. So it depends on which environment you're operating in.
Are you suggesting that there are ways in which the scientific community, at the very least, ought to be embracing or celebrating this or helping people deal with the, you know, the problems that come along with it? What?
I'd say the latter in the sense of, you know, in terms of learning how to teach people who have Asperger's, in the sense that if you assume all students are identical, you know, the Asperger's student is not going to pick up the subtle, sarcastic comment by a teacher. They have to be very direct and say, this is wrong. And so once you realize, you know, a student you're working with has Asperger's and you know how to communicate directly and avoid the subtle nod and wink that might be sufficient for a neurotypical kid,
right.
then you can make it work. And the other thing about it is, you know, also teaching to the deficits in the sense of probably the most difficult courses for my son are ones that focus on team involvement and also, you know, standing up and giving a talk and learning how to do this. And again, as long as his instructor realizes that for my son this is going to be hard and is going to take some extra work, then and also that they know the situation, there's a chance it'll work. If he was trying to hide it and they didn't know what was going on, they just think he was a miserable student. But once they understand the situation, then he can make progress and work on it.
Well, what a great panel and a rare and good chance for us to talk about it. Lots of people want to do that. Joseph's calling from Long Island in New York. Hi, Joseph. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Hi.
Hi.
Yes. One thing I'd like to bring out is the fact that is the overly negative representation, let's say, from autism speech and things of that nature, where, like in their film Autism Every Day, they portray every autistic in a unified manner, and then they include everybody, no matter what your level on the spectrum, in that statistic of 1 in 150. And these are the kind of things to say, I protested their walks, other people have protested their walks, and in fact, on the blogging site, Autism Hub, there's many bloggers who consistently talk about this negative stereotype where they help parents engage in feeling sorry for themselves, and they promote that type of thing to one point where an autism mother goes and says, hey, I was thinking about killing my own child, driving off the bridge, and there's been outrage within the whole community about that one statement.
Lizzie Gottlieb, Joseph is, putting Aspies, as a phrase I guess is widespread, right in the autistic camp, and he doesn't like the common characterization. Your work certainly pushes against some of that negative stereotyping, but how do you see the – is there a generic – kind of view of folks with this syndrome that becomes a burden for someone like your brother?
I think it's all very new still. Many people I meet have never heard of Asperger's syndrome at this point. And many of the parents and siblings and family members of people I speak to with Asperger's syndrome and the people themselves do see a lot of positive sides to it as well. And I think that's something that I tried certainly to show in our film is, you know, all of Nikki's joy and all of my family's joy that we have, that we share together. And, you know, his talents and skills and his exuberance for life are all things that I think can be a part of Asperger's syndrome or be something people with Asperger's syndrome, you know, be a way that they are in the world.
I want to ask you, your family, your father, Robert Gottlieb, was editor of The New Yorker, you're Nikki's mom, Maria Tucci, an actress. This is a long way from the sort of celebrated geek world of Silicon Valley or MIT or elsewhere. Was it more of a challenge to figure out how to engage Nikki, not being from that kind of, systematizing numerical scientific world?
If that's a question for me,
Lizzie, Nikki, either way.
You did mention my name, so I'll answer.
Yes, sir.
The thing is really that, first of all, as I said, all Asperger people are different, and I wasn't quite, I mean, I was told a little, but I was told about the Silicon Valley and MIT people, or people like that, but, you know, it's not like I've had, like, they've emphasized that world.
I mean, we see you richly engaging with your parents and sister in the film around literature and theater and much that's not science-based.
Well, yes, exactly. But I actually, you know, literature and theater are my parents' fields, and I just happened to have a job in the theater. But there are some other fields that I have been involved in that are very different from the MIT Silicon Valley and yet share similar traits. And for that reason, the MIT Silicon Valley is not so surprising because what the fields I'm involved in and those fields involved in have something in common, which is that and something I recognize, which is what I describe as material involving patterns and routines and schedules and things like that, which I see that MIT and Silicon Valley do apply
absolutely,
as well as
all the time. Key to those spheres as well. Lizzie, may I ask you?
I think it's very important to also think about that there are all kinds of families that have people with Asperger's syndrome in them. It's maybe more common in scientific type families, but all kinds of families have this. But what's the commonality that this film so beautifully portrays is that all parents are worried about what's going to happen to their child, who they see as bright and accomplished in so many ways, and are so worried about what life has in store for them as far as the job world and the personal world. And I think that's really the beauty of this film. We can talk about all the different kinds of people who have Asperger's syndrome and the different families they come to, but that common worry is really the most important message of this film, I think, and what are we going to do about it as a society?
Lizzie, that's very movingly portrayed in the film, in particular when you sit down and you ask your mother what her expectations are of you as a sibling to Nikki. You know, looking forward, your parents, I mean, your father, we see him lovingly helping Nikki shave. Not that Nikki couldn't do some of that himself, but all these interactions were there helping Nikki. But you're the one, your generation, that will be around with Nikki. How do you see that future, Lizzie?
Well, again, you know, I think that's part of the reason why I started to make the film. It's a question that we don't know the answer to. I mean, I think that I'm 7 years older than Nikki, and the assumption is that eventually it'll be me and Nikki. I have my own children. I have a husband. Mm-hmm. But I think that Nikki is going to, in the next few years, be able to find work and be able to live independently with some kind of supervision by my parents, and then, if necessary, by me. That's our hope and our goal. And as Linda was saying, I think it is so important that we as a society try to figure out some answers to how to help these people live productive and interesting lives where they can have the independence that they're capable of, but also have some sort of somebody watching out for them to help them with the things that they need help with. I think that Nikki and so many of the other people I've met with Asperger's syndrome have such a huge amount to offer the world and just need to, some sort of structure in which to organize that their energies.
Nikki Gottlieb, our time grows very short, but the last word goes to you. What can, I don't know, the world out there do to be most helpful to someone in your circumstance?
Well, what I think they should do, what parents and helpers should tell Asperger people is to hone on their talents, because not only, what's so amazing is that yes, we have disabilities, but we also have amazing talents.
Great talents, as well. And with that's all we're going to get today. But hone your talent. It sounds like great advice. Nikki Gottlieb, Lizzie, the new documentary is Today's Man. I'm sorry, Nikki, but the clock goes. Linda Geller and Brian Hughes, thanks for joining us. Thanks to all of you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.